Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-hosts Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I am Scott, your co-host, and with me, as always, Kevin. Kevin, how you doing today?
Hey, hey, hey. Happy June. Happy Thursday. Happy listeners. I hope we're going to have a really, really good group of people listening because we are going to have a wonderful show today. I'm so excited.
It's going to be fantastic. We are into our second week of Pride Month. It is Thursday, June 9th. And we are so excited to have Jeffrey Marsh on today. It's going to be a fantastic show.
Yeah. I mean, this is someone who has more than a quarter billion views across social media. Talking about someone who takes every single thing that we do here on Healing Stigma to a level of social media acceptance and positive results, I've been a fan of Jeffrey's for a while, and this is going to be fantastic.
It is going to be a fun time had by, that is for sure. We're going to jump right into it. Even though there's a lot of stuff going on in the news, we had some major elections happening in California Tuesday. We have your Lammy's Awards on Monday. We got my podcast awards finishing up this Sunday. But let's go ahead and jump right into it. I'm going to get Jeffrey on the line here. We're going to play a song from our good friend Tara Naomi. She'll be our featured guest today. This is Help You Fly. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with the fantastic Jeffrey Marsh.
I know how misery loves a company. Got a party gathered around you now. They come running from far and wide. But who's gonna help you fly? And they come calling when you're falling down. Someone always pick you up off the ground. Oh, nobody wanna see you cry. But who's gonna help you fly? Whoa, whoa. Who's gonna help you fly? Well, the city that I live in feels smaller every day. It's like a little town. People always gonna help you get by. But who's gonna help you fly? It's a messed up situation when I got the word to call on when the well runs dry. But I just wanna celebrate my life. Wanna find someone to help me fly. Whoa. Bye.
Alrighty, and that's the great Tara Naomi with Help You Fly. Guys, we are so lucky. Our guest today is a bona fide social media phenomenon. As Kevin said, he has over a quarter billion views over social media.
We're gonna work on this, and we're gonna ask Jeffrey what that means. And I'm gonna be the language police and help you along here, Scott. So they is going to be the pronoun for Jeffrey. The singular
I'm
pronoun
be in
is they or them.
Today. You don't understand.
Yep,
I still have
good.
Nightmares from diagramming sentences in high school. But I will get through this,
but
I promise.
This isn't a test. This is good. This is actually why we're doing this. This is part of the reason, I believe. I'm not going to speak on Jeffrey's behalf on what it means, but for so many of my friends, remember, I was an English teacher for quite a while before a news report came along and made me the porn star teacher and then a Lambda finalist based on all the stuff I've written. But I'm one of those people that for the pronoun antecedent, I get the relationship. But there's a relationship here I want to bring out that it relates and it makes sense. And I love it. I really, really do. So anyway, we're going to do that and we're going to get through it because we have someone on the show today, Jeffrey, who is a leader in so many things in the genderqueer movement, of which pronouns are a very important part. So there we go.
Exactly. Jeffrey's been advocating for self-acceptance and loving one another through his Vine, YouTube, and many other platforms, along with trendy hashtags such as No Time to Hate Myself and Don't Say That's So Gay, which I love. He's written for and been featured in such magazines as Oprah Magazine, Huffington Post, New York Times. See? I'm just going to start the whole thing over again. Jeffrey, you got to forgive me, okay? You're Jeffrey to me today because the pronoun thing messes me all up.
You're lovely.
What's that?
No, I can hear you laughing. I can hear you laughing.
Okay. I'm finding it wonderful.
My goodness.
You do not cut a single sentence of what has happened so far.
I know.
All right, we're not going to. I think we're just going to jump right into it. I'll see how I
Go
cut
ahead.
It together here. Okay, so pronouns aside, we are so excited today to have on the fantastic Jeffrey Marsh. Jeffrey, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! I can't believe
Welcome.
We have you on. You are so busy. How do you have time with all of your social media? You are on every social media there is, my friend. Isn't that exhausting?
No, because it's something I love to do, and it's actually how I heal stigma in my own life.
That's lovely.
I love that.
That's why I wanted to talk to you.
Kevin and I have been talking about you for a long time. Yeah. We're such a big fan of everything you do. But go ahead and let's give all of our listeners a real quick recap for those of you that might have caught one of those quarter of a billion views here. Talk a little bit about where you grew up, what kind of a kid were you, and how did you come to accept? You're so well known for accepting yourself and for making each other accept each other and love for everybody. Talk about the first years growing up and where did you grow up at?
I have something to say first before we get to that.
Sure.
And I need to be the bossy guest. I really have to point out that I was so delighted to see that you were nominated for the podcast awards.
Oh,
that's really
cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think it is such a form of respect, and it is a testament to how powerful the work is that you're doing.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I love doing what I do. I came to this the hard way. My quick backstory is my dad got real ill and I quit my job, moved back home to take care of him, and was really looking for a hobby, for something to do. And I've come upon this radio thing that found such fantastic people like you and Kevin that this is a joy for me every day. So thank you for that, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And there's a way to vote for it. There's a way to put, for our listeners, there is a way to put your opinion to a vote, and we'll fill you in later on that in case you don't know already. And if you haven't voted today, for all of our listeners, you can do it today and tomorrow and the next day, I believe. I'm not exactly sure how many days you can, but we'll give those details at the end of it. So listen up.
You guys, enough about me. Back to Jeffrey.
Okay. Well, Jeffrey brought it up, so I had to do it.
Oh, I grew up.
Where'd you grow up?
Yeah. Farm in Pennsylvania was at the same time incredibly isolating and stigmatizing to grow up.
Yeah.
I had no idea that there were other queer people, LGBT people in the universe.
Right.
There were couple
the joke your mother told. The joke your mother told is so. I don't mean to interrupt, Jeffrey, but I've been peeking at How to Be You. I know you'll speak about this afterwards, but I was peeking some of the
plug in my book already.
Yeah. Oh, the joke your mother told is so powerful, and I just have to express also. I grew up not as extremely poor, but an only child to parents who would be most of my friends' grandparents' ages, who were extremely surprised. They were told they couldn't have kids, and I came along, and they weren't financially, in many ways, prepared for and did everything they could to give me a great upbringing. But still, the poverty thing strikes a chord with me because I know how many people, sometimes tied in with poverty, don't get community or a community that understands them and therefore feels they're alone. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but the joke your mother told, again, I keep going on with that, just that my jaw dropped open, kind of laughing and crying at the same time.
Do you want to tell it?
Okay, if I may, I may be paraphrasing it, but it was the fact that you said your mother told a joke that you could so remember so clearly because of this farm and what was going on. You were finding yourself or your way to be yourself as the farm is going down due to, naturally, as many of our farms have, due to real impoverished situations. And your mother told this joke that was, it was the fact that, did you hear a fire broke out in the bathroom? And people are like, oh, my God, that's terrible. It's like, yeah, that's okay, but it didn't reach the house. And I just think that – did I screw it up? I'm so sorry. Did I get it right?
Perfect. Absolutely.
Yeah,
perfect.
And I just was like, wow. That so moved me. And that's what I meant. I mean, for folks, we can talk about it. Jeffrey isn't just a figure, isn't just – I mean, yes, a Vine sensation, and the most beautiful eyes I have ever seen. I swear, Vermeer wants to paint your eyes. Vermeer's going to come back from the dead just to paint your eyes. But in terms of beyond this, there is a storyteller here, and what I read was just – you know, that's why I knew, like I said, this whole idea of stigma and how to challenge it is something you do with the most incredible style and you that allows other people to express who they are.
The three of us are kindred spirits in that way.
Yeah.
It is usually, I would say it comes up 99% of the time, but pronoun usage, right? And it's usually me advocating. But to hear, I'm just sitting there silently on the line, and to hear you guys discussing it before I'm even brought into the conversation was healing for my stigma, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Well, that's fantastic.
That's cool.
Because it really is such a
thank you.
Such a forward moving step that you're taking upon yourself to really you defining yourself and letting everyone else know that only you can define yourself, that we shouldn't be putting labels on anybody. And I just think how were you able to get to that place? That's just amazing.
Well, it took years, and for the past, I know you guys will understand this. For the past 15 years, I've been a practicing Buddhist, and that certainly helped the healing.
Excellent.
To be able to sit silently with oneself in kindness charges your batteries for anything else that life is going to bring to you. I encounter so many people, not just young people and not just queer people, with so many people who are afraid of being physically alone, afraid of alone time, afraid of downtime, afraid of solitude.
Right.
And I think part of our healing is to be found in the silence, if I can get poetic for a moment.
But I love your story, too. You kind of talk about coming into your own and being so fierce when your first foray, we'll say, was – when you decided to shave your legs. I think that's a hilarious story. And really talking to your dad about that, describe that story a little bit. It's a great video. People have to see it. But talk about that. How did that feel at the time to you?
At the time, it was actually one, gosh, I mean, isn't this just the way life goes? It was one of the most traumatizing events and one of the most healing events at the same time, like a yin and yang sort of moment.
Yep.
Right.
It was traumatizing because I was expressing who I was and being honest and open about who I was, and I was met with violence in my home, where you're supposed to be safe.
Right.
And it was one of the most healing events because it brought such an intense clarity about who must do the work of healing. And that person is me. I can't depend on my parents to be able to do that for me.
That's incredible.
So I was a teenager at the time, and it was powerful to have that realization.
God, I wish I knew you at the time. I could have told you to tell your dad you just made the swim team.
I saved my chest and I saved my armpits too. Yeah, exactly.
Come on, Dad. I just made the swim team. Check it out. Check it out. And check out my new Speedos.
Exactly.
Sorry. No, I seriously, from your head to your high heels, I just love what you do. And the fact that you're able to express that and then get people to express it themselves. I know, there'll be other things to go on about here. When they express how they are, you know, how they look, could you just, for me, I love this, in terms of the movement and the fans, you know, I'm sure, this movement for younger people and why you feel it is so important for younger people, because I'll just share this in a second. One of the things that was so important at the Lammies was the fact that in this room, in its 28th year doing this, there was this kind of political, when you have someone whose last name is Clinton, we had Kate Clinton as the MC, and it was the fact that in this room was something very important to supply positive role models in literature, in our storytelling, in our reporting. I mean, all of us right now on the show, this is something very dear to our heart, but continue that tradition so that there are more and more, be it transgender, I mean, all of these different things are to supply these, if you will, role models, but they're nothing if the role model is on a dusty shelf in a library and nobody's checking out the book. So my question is, how is it taking off, and why maybe, in what you do, do you feel, is it taking off and finding this resonance with younger people?
I think young people are, and they're individuals, of course. I don't mean to talk about them like they're monolithic, but I think, you know, young people have the practice of being told by other people who they are, how they should act, and feeling like that's not in sync with their authentic self. That's a handy way to talk about being a teenager, I think, for most people. And so they see the metaphor in me because they know that society wants certain things for me that I don't step into, that are not naturally me. And so I think they're magnetized to that aspect of it. They're also, if I may say, light years ahead when it comes to accepting different gender identities, sexualities, identities, period. That they, you know, it's a really delicate balance because they're not old enough to have the maturity that comes with understanding how the whole of society works. At the same time, they are coming from a place where they ask me what my pronouns are. Not only is it not a big issue for them, but they know that it's part of what a good person does is just, you know, find out what pronouns you want me to use. I'll use those.
Right. Hey, Jeffrey, can I be a language police for just 1 second? I was curious about this because I don't have the answer for it. Is there an abbreviation that could be used for naturally, I can only think of abbreviations that are gender-based. Mr., Ms., Mrs. So
yeah,
the, you know, the is there one? What is it? I'm so curious.
You'll know this word. You're talking about the honorific.
Yeah.
And the gender-neutral honorific is MX period mix.
That is brilliant. I didn't know that. I learned something about language. You make me so excited. You really do. Hey, I gotta pop one other thing in before Scott jumps. I do interrupt terribly, but do you know that there is a play in England about cross-dressing in Victorian England time based on a true story?
Who's the historic figure? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Stella and Fanny's story is told in a new play by Neil Bartlett, starring Oscar, I think it's Batterham, and Richard Cant. I can send you a link afterwards. I think
this
is fantastic. It's putting a history thing into something that is so timely with everything from, you know, transgender, as they, I think, already stigmatize it when they call it a bathroom bill. I think that's the very language of it stigmatizes what is so much a human rights issue, and that's why, again, I'd be language police here. But I'll share this with you afterwards because I think you'll really like what's going on here, and I think it will also bring back attention to what you're doing here in America. This is what's going on in England, and I'm sure this thing is going with your hits. It's going all around the world, but I love how this is using, again, all of it is using expression be it in theater, expression be it, you know, through social media. It's challenging what people come to accept. And I love the fact, Scott, can I just say by leaving it in, I love the fact that, as you say, this is difficult, but it's certainly something that's worth that, bringing it up and interrupting people, as I do so rudely, to say, no, there's really something positive, wonderful here going on when we challenge these things, even from pronouns that label us and prejudge us. So there you go. That's the language police on the bandwagon.
Okay, now I have 7 things to say, but I will say this. then we'll get on with the interview. It wasn't rude. It was firm, but it was kind. And I decided a long while ago that when I had the pronoun discussion with people, that I would never once try to make someone feel bad. So I never wanted, you know, I realized I can't decide what is going to come out of my mouth, or I can't decide the details of what I'm going to say when we talk about it, but I can decide how I'm going to approach that subject, and it's going to be respect and kindness and compassion, and yes, we're all working together. So here's another name to Google. Julian Eltinge. Vaudevillian.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Julian was dubbed the world's greatest female impersonator on vaudeville.
Huh.
But Julian played with gender and had a Broadway theater named after him.
Oh, wow.
Performed the Eltinge Theater, which is now the AMC on 42nd Street. And you can go see a painting of Julian on the ceiling in the AMC Theater. But I digress.
There you go. We'll add it to the walking tour of New York City right here that we're putting together.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It's actually a mural on the ceiling in the AMC Theater, which used to be the Eltinge Theater, of this performer, Julian Eltinge, as the three muses. So poetry, art, music, I think are the three muses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's an incredible historical context for this, and Shakespeare used singular they.
I didn't realize that. He used they in his work.
Uh-huh. There is a historic context for this striving to have an identity-neutral pronoun, a gender-neutral pronoun. But anyway, we're digressing a heck of a lot.
This is a definitely freedom of consciousness speak today. That's a good thing. We like that.
Can't bring up Shakespeare without me blurting something out. Go ahead.
The way I first came across you, Jeffrey, was I have a really good friend I've made through the radio, Scott Turner Schofield. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him at all, but he was the first transgender man on The Bold and the Beautiful when they did their storyline there. And he did a fantastic TED Talk all about gender, sexuality, and how did he put it? It was three deals there. And it kind of, when I started Googling it and looking at it, it's what really made me find you and look you up, because it talks about gender is really a social norm and has nothing to do with biologics. It has to do with the social constraints that people put on you and you put on yourself. And that's when I started exploring this and found you, Jeffrey. And I just think I'm so happy that Scott turned me on to it, because I just think you're doing such amazing work. When were you able to first put this into words for yourself?
Oh, gosh. I told my mom when I was 11. Is that what you mean?
Really?
How'd that go?
As we already discussed, she is a humorist.
Yeah.
But she wasn't very happy that day. We were on our way home from church, and I had a lot to say, but all I could get to come out really was this very squeaky, at first, was this very squeaky, "I think I like boys."
That was my opener.
That was
your opener. On the way home from church. Yeah.
Exactly. And mom
of course.
On the brake and turned the wheel of the car, and the car went off the road and into a ditch. She started saying, "You're not old enough to talk about that. You can't talk about things like that," and on and on. So, stigmatizing, to put it in context of your show.
Yeah, yeah.
And where was the very first time that you actually found some community? Were you able to find community in Pennsylvania? Did you have to travel really far outside of your own early circle to – where was your first experience with other people in the community?
I went from York County, Pennsylvania. That's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And went to college in Philadelphia.
Ooh, okay.
Which is, of course, still Pennsylvania, of course. But it is far enough away that your parents are not going to surprise visit you.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is very important. And
exactly.
Once I got that far away, I don't know if you had this experience, but for a while there, it was like a pendulum swing. I was so far in the closet that when the closet door came open, I swung so far in the other direction. And I was ultra, ultra queer for a very good few months. And came back to, in Philadelphia, did all the parades, and there was a neighborhood called the Fruit Loop there, hung out. Really, I was still that country, little country person coming to the big city in Philadelphia, so eyes wide at all the bars and the fun activities that go with
that. I knew somebody was having fun in Philadelphia while I was going up the Schuylkill on my ass backwards. What I remember of Philadelphia was having to, during the summer, this is funny, I would always go there for the Independence Day regatta, and I had to row lightweight during the summer, and then I rode heavyweight for my school because I was a poor kid and I wanted to get a college education, and so I put the weight back on again. But in July 4th was part of the extreme weight losing, so I can remember getting my hands off the oars and not being able to open up my hands, and then just going to a theater to watch, or a movie theater, to watch a film so that I didn't have to eat anything before the next race, so we didn't put weight on. While all the heavyweights are going over to have, what is it, the cheesesteaks. So I have some really extreme memories of the city of brotherly love. Lovely ones, because I love the Schuylkill and I love racing on it. But I have some really bizarre memories from there, and I'm so glad you were having fun. I knew somebody had to be having fun there.
Well, yeah, I mean, what you were doing might have been fun.
No, it was. I love it. I love it. I have some great friends that come from there. I know. I absolutely am kidding. All of the rowing that I did there was wonderful. I chose to row lightweight. I love doing it, and it was really, really wonderful. But the crazy thing is I also did things. What you just said, the reason why it came out for me is I always did things to the extreme, I think. Do you know what I'm saying? So if a boat had to make weight and people were having trouble losing weight, I'd be like, okay, I can do it. I can do that. I was competitive about everything. If I was going to compete, I had to compete at the highest level I could to be having fun doing something. That's me.
Mm-hmm. Me.
And not to armchair psychoanalyze, but do you feel that that was part of trying to heal the stigma, was the overachieving?
You know, for me, I think that's one of the – God, you're good. You really, really are. I think for me, when I look back on all of it, it's kind of like one of the things that I – again, the kindred spirits here, I just have to say. When I watched your – what is it? The What is Gender Fluid video.
Uh-huh.
There's a very serious part to it about the shaving the legs, a very great lesson there. And for me, it's when I hear you say, the aggressive response just doesn't work for me anymore. And it's a choice. Sometimes we think that aggression needs to be matched with aggression. And again, there's another, I'm going to send you a copy of my poetry book, because there's another one in there I'll point out other than the gender bend, but I'm not going to do this right now. I'm not going to go into that. It's just stuff that you'll see about aggression doesn't need to be matched with aggression.
Yeah.
But how and what you do every day and how you present yourself in public can be. I have a friend who is extremely intelligent, wonderful, offers so many good insights on things, and is genderqueer walking down the street. And I see sometimes the aggressive responses that people want to stir up in my friend by what they're doing. The taunts, the basically constant bullying from adults. Look at this political world we're in. It's not acceptable.
Yep.
But the way to answer that and respond to it is an artwork done with style. I see how my friend does it. I see how you do it. And it is truly, truly lovely to see the disarming. It's kind of sticking. What is that? Scott, help me out here. Wasn't there that famous photograph? Jeffrey, you might know. What was the photograph there of putting the flower in the rifle of one of the, was it a
gun,
it was 1960s photo?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
looking at a soldier. And you kind of you do that to people's gender preconceptions, or, or it's not the right word, but they're gender labels. You kind of stick that flower right in the barrel instead of answering a bullet with a bullet, and I just love what you do. So for me personally, when I answer your question about the competition, I think for me the competition was the fact that I was playing a game within the rules of things that were already there. I still, to this day, love rowing, and I love the fact that I will probably, again, I've always, often said this, I think I'd like to in the future coach LGBTQ youth, if there's a way, or adults in a way, as a way of healing stigmas. I've never coached a boat, really, that could be genderqueer in the boat and free to be themselves and enjoy what I've enjoyed in rowing. Because when I rowed on a team, and I was so fortunate and loved the fact that I had the chance to coach and all these things. But since, and I'll just say this quickly, Jeffrey, if you don't know my backstory, I'm a survivor of high-profile stigma. I was outed on the evening news to 1.5 million folks as the porn star teacher, okay? So I chose, and I still say this, I chose to do legal work. I chose with the knowledge of, as a bisexual, and my wife, who is a bisexual, I just need to say this, my partner, I refer to her as my partner. That's just the way we do it. My partner is such a big fan of yours. I just need you to know that. Ever since, it wasn't just me, my partner is smitten with everything you do, and again, we're huge fans. So the end result in this, I chose to play not by the rules when I wasn't allowed to play the game anymore. So when it's not the fact that I don't want to teach. It's not the fact that I don't want to coach. But again, after this idea of being stigmatized as a bisexual, but realizing, wait a second, that's who I am. And the other members of my community, as I become the canary, if you will, in the coal mine of feeling what it was like to be stigmatized as a bisexual, I look and see what it's like to be stigmatized as someone who's genderqueer. Well, guess what? If someone else is being stigmatized for being gay or being a lesbian or, you know, whatever it's going to be outside of that, we feel that. So for me now, after I was gone through this experience and have done the poetry and I'm now writing the Healing Stigma book, as we speak, I'm writing that, and I'm so thrilled with your book as well. This is the crazy part of it. For me personally, I'm not playing by the rules of expectation anymore. Instead, through this meat grinder of an experience, I have found what my talents are minus the expectations, and now it's not a competition with myself. Mm-hmm. I'm motivated by helping others. And I know that's not, it's not a sales pitch. I'm motivated to do the best I can in a much more healing way as opposed to a competitive way. And yet I have to admit this. I think it's as hard, if not harder work, but it's fulfilling in a whole different way that feeds me in everything I do from, you know, how I another thing I want to talk about later as well is, you know, I have the opportunity, I don't know if you've seen this on social media, but there was a thing out about finding out if you're, you know, if your gym is genderqueer, is LGBTQ friendly.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that we need to think about, and I want to support those those abilities that allow people to do that. And when I see that I can help in that way, healing stigma is what I love doing. Writing is what I love doing. And it doesn't have to be in a class. Two of my students, here's the last thing on it. Two of my students, now grown up, lovely, lovely, intelligent, wonderful women, came to one of my poetry readings and said, "We totally get it. You're teaching the most important lesson you've ever had to teach. Now just the world is your classroom. We get it. We totally get it."
Yes.
So, yeah, without the expectations, I found a better form of me without the, if you will, the aggression that came from competing at a game that was already had preset rules.
Well, yeah. It's
Does
not,
that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. Because it's not the what, it's the how.
Yeah.
In the sense that rowing is not bad or good, necessarily. You can use it to try to prove your worth, which is absolutely no fun. Or you can use rowing because it's something you love, because you love your body, because you want to feel good, right? It's it's the approach. But what I project onto that is being totally in sync with life, with the world, with nature.
Yep.
Clicking into that. Bob,
you said it.
Do you still exist? Are you still there?
I'm listening. I like to. I kind of pop in when I have a question. Let's go. I really want to know about how your social media evolution came. Tell me about what came first, what got you intrigued by it, and how did it just boom to where it is? What was your first experience into social media?
Gosh. I mean, I guess like 13 years ago, I had a Facebook page. But that's a boring story. I've always been trying to help people heal stigma. In social media or in real life, I have never encountered anyone who was not told at some point, there is something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In one form or another.
And how fast that happens on the internet.
Well, please, let's return to that subject in a second. The social media world, I had no idea that people were so hungry for that message. There is nothing wrong with you. I tried it on YouTube first and then went to Vine. I at first thought, oh, no, I have so much more to say than 6.5 seconds, which is the length of a Vine. But it really caused me to distill the message down to its most elemental.
Right.
And vines loop around. So the repetitive nature of it was like a mantra.
Right.
And people just start, if you look at my numbers, there are certain times where there are spikes, right? I danced around on my rooftop just as the Statue of Liberty for 4th of July, and that one was really popular, right?
Right.
But then there was one where I said, I can predict the future.
Yeah.
I know you're going to be
okay. Can I just say my favorite? My favorite is how I deal with bullies. Whenever I need to just totally get that quick fix, I watch How I Deal with Bullies.
That's the one where you spit at Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
I love that one. Oh, my God. That's so much fun.
Let's be very specific. That was an homage to Linda Carter.
I think, have you ever run into her in New York? I know she's stays around the New York area a lot. Have you gone to any of the events where she's on by HRC all the time and all that other thing?
I follow her on Twitter and I try to catch everything that I possibly can.
Find her amazing. Like you, I just find her amazing. I follow her on Twitter as well. And I have a friend on Facebook that's actually friends with her and gave me her manager's number. And I was able to contact him and I think I may get her on the show later in the fall. So I'm so excited. I mean, that would be one of my dream guests besides you, Jeffrey Marsh. Linda Carter is so fantastic to talk to.
Well, I don't know if she'll ever see it, but I just did a photo shoot with BuzzFeed where they asked a couple of people who was their hero, and I chose Linda. And so we did a photo essay and like a little tribute to Linda. So I'll tag her in it when they post it.
There you go. That's fantastic.
She's she might
now,
be.
Now, one of the things I want to ask you, too, because you kind of alluded to it earlier, just the Vine thing, is that a do you think that's part of our culture now? Because I was looking at it. On Vine, you have over 250,000 subscribers. On YouTube, it's like 12,000. Is that because people like that, smaller attention span now, and they're able to, or do you think it's more of the mantra thing of repeating it over and over again? What do you think makes Vine such a powerful medium as opposed to, say, YouTube or something like that?
Gosh, for me, I think it is, for some reason, and maybe you guys have had some input on this, Vine feels even more intimate than YouTube does to me. And I think people really crave that sort of feeling of being seen.
Right.
And really seeing someone. Which, you know, the YouTube is a little bit more difficult. Not quite sure why, but Vine is just the bare bones, minimum, straight to the heart. Boom. 6 seconds.
Well, I think it's like you said, too. I think it's the distillation that you have to do to get your point across if you're genuine like you are and you put that into such a small, compact file. I think that genuineness comes through and kind of like a punch in the gut kind of thing. I think that's one of the things you do so well.
Punch in the gut, yeah. Someone just
I think it's the haiku
tweeted
of social media. There's something incredibly, like you have to have that one message, but you have such freedom in it. So there's like, there's something in the tightness. A dear friend of mine wrote an entire book, and I'm not laughing, but an entire book of haikus, and I never thought I could read it. It has a story, it has an arc, it has a whole thing through it, and I'm so thrilled to say that when I got yours and saw them and started looking at them, I'm just throwing this out there, but there's something so restrictive in it that it's freeing. You have to get to that one point and do it well for it to click. And when those people that have a talent at it do it, there's something so amazing in the art form of it. I don't know how else to put it. And, of course, the others are wonderful as well, but I also think that the audience sometimes and how people are looking on handhelds, how they're moving quickly from place to place, and then they see something that's uplifting, it's like that incredible, incredible personal, as you said, pat on the back, look in the face, kind of, you know, hug, giggle. But it is what it is. It's one thing, and if it does itself well, and the world needs to have at this moment something that makes it go, hey, listen, you're going to be okay, then that is truly moving. And to me, all I was going to say, it just seems like, I don't know, maybe not a haiku, it could be wrong, but there's something restrictive and freeing in it at the same time. I love it.
Yeah. I think haiku is exactly what it is for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
Because of the way Vine is structured, and this has to do absolutely with me and my personal life and who I am to the core, there is no space for caveats, excuses, explanations about who you are, why you're doing what you're doing. There actually is no room for extrapolations. Like, it's true in this instance, but not this one. And, you know, don't think I meant this by this word. And all the explaining we're encouraged to do, we're taught to do as children, there's no space for it. So there's no explaining. Just say what it is, and that's it.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Well, there's so much more I want to talk about besides social media. So one last question before we go to break here. I'm a huge reality TV fan, and they just had the Amazing Race, all the social media personalities. Were you asked to participate in that, or is that something, would you do that, find a partner and go around the world and do those crazy things?
Do you want to be my partner?
Any day of the week, my friend. Any day of the week.
I think this would work really well together.
As long as I don't have to eat the funky bugs and the stuff from the different cultures. I'm not good at eating funky stuff I don't like, but I'll do any other challenge there is out
there.
Okay. You heard it here on Healing Stigma Radio.
Exactly. Where matches are made in heaven right here for the Amazing Rest. Looking for season 16 coming to you, Jeffrey Marsh and Scott Bullerton. I want to go ahead and come back and talk all about the book you have coming out, your Apple iTunes app, because we just got our own. I want to talk about the app that I think is fantastic. We're going to take a quick break and play another song from our good friend Tara Naomi. This is You For Me. We're talking to the amazing Jeffrey Marsh. This is Scott and Kevin on Healing Stigma Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
from the top of a mountain in the dead of night. It'll be you and me and a couple of dogs, and the rest of the world can just move on. Cause I got what I want and I got what I need, and there's nothing in this world but you or me. And there'll be fish in the lake, and there'll be chickens on the lawn. Forget all that we learned, we'll forget our plans. We'll see things more clearly in the absence of the light, and we'll realize there's nothing more than this.
And that is the amazing Terry Naomi, You For Me. I was telling Jeff before the break, that is actually, we were talking about Scott Turner Schofield earlier, and if you haven't seen his TED Talk on gender identity, I definitely recommend you go to YouTube and see that. But this is actually, Tara is Scott's new girlfriend, and she has this fantastic new album out, so we're so excited to feature her music today.
Beautiful.
But back to our guest today, Jeffrey Marsh, you are just so fantastic. Not only are you known for amazing social media, you have your own app on the iStore that is just fantastic. It has daily affirmations. Tell us how that came about and tell us about the app a bit.
Well, it's been, I think you were joking off air maybe before we start, before we hit the record button, that I have a lot going on in my life.
Right.
to do these days. The app is one of my favorite things that is going on, because
that's cool.
Fans kept saying that they would listen to my vines, not necessarily watch, but listen to them as they were falling asleep, and that they would put a vine on and have the earbuds in when they were on their way to school, sort of getting them into a space where they knew that they were acceptable and lovable, and before they would have to walk into school.
Wow.
Right.
And so they they began asking for more encouragement along those lines.
Yeah.
And so we created this app so that they could have audio mentoring. And you'll notice it's totally free and everybody should download it and love it. But you'll note there's a section for audio, and so there's pep talks, there's like mini guided meditations reminding you to breathe and stuff like that. But there's also, you know, since I am this personality, this, you know, social media celebrity, we could say, there's like behind the scenes videos, and there's photos that you're not going to see on my social channels, sort of like more intimacy on language police. Is that a word?
Yeah,
I kind of throw it around.
The more intimate things, you know, that I'm not going to blast out on my Instagram, you're going to see inside the app. So it's really for the super connectors of the world that really want to be in a different conversation than the one we were all taught to be in.
And it's really well put together. Did you have a lot of input into how it was being built, or how did the whole thing come about?
Oh yeah. Yeah, everything that's in my empire, and I use that word in such a positive way, I have a big hand in, because it absolutely must come from an authentic heart place for me.
Yeah.
Right.
I won't do it otherwise. And speaking of which, you'll see, oh my gosh, I have to speak about this in really vague terms.
We're getting a scoop. We're getting a very vague scoop, I think,
you
Kevin.
You are.
Yes, everyone gather around your very specific speakers for a very vague scoop. Here we go.
I will be working with a prominent clothing brand to bring a gender-free clothing line in the coming
months.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Oh, that's really a breakthrough.
You know, Zara did this thing called genderless? Ungendered, something like that. But it was like, you know, gray T-shirts and jeans.
Yeah.
And those are technically for everybody. A gray T-shirt is for everybody. But my line will have a little bit more heart, a little bit more personality, color, expression. But you won't have to decide if you're going to wear men's clothing or women's clothing before you get started shopping.
That's
so.
That's really
that is
cool.
Amazing. Can you do it in Garanimal style? Because I never know what to match with anything.
I don't remember what those were. Oh, my gosh. You had to match the animals.
I'm horrible in fashion. I tip my hat to you in fashion, Jeffrey, because I have just – that's not the gay gene that I inherited. So if you could do that new clothing line for me and Garanimal if that was something. So if you have maybe a transgender with a – cisgender into something or other, I'll be good.
Absolutely. We'll put it in the tag. The tiger.
Hey,
and
Scott.
The tiger.
Scott, I'll send you the, I'm sure I'll have my lovely partner figure it out and put it up on, help me with some kind of social media on this, but you'll see again from my pictures at the Lammies, you got to also figure this out, because I have figured out a long time ago that Garanimals didn't run up into the adult sizes. And so I hit that same problematic. Here's something even worse.
Yep.
Because I did so many things like that were sports that were all consuming with uniforms, and then you had all this extra sports gear. That was really easy to wear for a while. It's like, not good for an interview. Now, okay, you're out of college now, kid. All right. But now the crazy thing that I found is the really cool thing is I have the color sense now of Johnny Cash. But I look good next to people who are very colorful in photos. And all I have to do is make sure, if I really want to zazz it up, is then you put on one or two things that are just of a different color, and then they can really make the statement as well. But, yeah, I have the color scheme of Johnny Cash when I get dressed up, and I'm always safe, you know? I'm kind of like, what is it, the Henry Ford first Model T, make it any color as long as it's black. So I wear black on black, and I look good next to people who have really good style at red carpet events. And I'm available. I just want to let people know that for style, if you need a really good black on black person on the red carpet, I will come and I will speak my mind, just like Jeffrey. So there you go. I just found out how easy it is for me to get to New York City, by the way. It was so lovely for the Lammies visit. I thought I was going to drive. I didn't. I took the express down from the Irish Riviera in New England, and it took right into Penn Station, and I was there. It was effortless. It was like ballet. It was gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
I'll be back. We got to get you up to Boston. Yeah, I would love to have a genderqueer team do things that are absolutely fun. I mean, I've had the chance because of rowing to see things in the world that are just amazing. As my father said, it was all timing. Years ago, you would have been a galley slave, and then you got a chance to pay for your education. But later, you know, I saw the suns go up over the pyramids while rowing on the Nile. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have seen that from the neighborhood I was in if it wasn't for the fact of, you know, having that opportunity to reach and go beyond what I thought just me I was capable of.
Yeah.
But I would love to do it with a genderqueer team. I think that's brilliant. And design a rowing line you could or sports line go. You have to close, but keep going. Don't stop. We'll have you back on the show. This is brilliant. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get into the book now, because I'm so excited about this. It's called How to Be You, and it's just so much of what you are, Jeffrey. It's a personal connection with your fans again. I love how you broke it into three parts, where it's a little bit for you, a little bit about you, and a little bit of something for the reader to actually talk about the inspiration for the book and let everyone know what it's all about.
Well, you mentioned haikus earlier, and I think that that sort of aesthetic carries over here, because haikus require your participation as you're reading them.
Right.
You are an active participant in creating the scene using your imagination and your participation to interpret the haiku. So it's not like being told what to do. And that's what this book is. I wanted it. You know, Penguin Random House took a huge risk because this book is almost uncategorizable.
Yeah.
You could call it a memoir because there are personal stories. Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not really that. And you could call it a self-help advice book because there's direct advice about how to accept yourself.
Yeah.
But it's not totally that. And my favorite part number three, is that it's a workbook. So we really do get down to coloring things in, answering questions, tearing out pages, doing activities, so that the person reading it is creating the book along with me, and it's having a direct experience of what I'm talking about. It's not about me.
I love that
chart.
Yeah.
It's not about me telling them what to do. It is us collaborating together.
Lovely.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And is it out now, or was it coming out last month, or when did it come out?
It is in pre-sale, so you've read excerpts and little bits here and there.
Yes.
But
okay.
It will come out officially. It will launch August the 2nd.
Oh, how exciting.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
they wanted
how exciting.
It is for everyone on the planet, not just young people. But they wanted it.
And are you
going to
do a book tour with it?
Well, that's the really fun thing. And I know that you guys have gravitated near and around the publishing industry as well.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do book tours any longer. Very rarely will they do book tours. Because they just don't make money, which is sad, but, you know, sending your author to 20 different states to sell 30 copies at a speaking event.
Well, can I just say something, though? And here's something that I just want to, I didn't want to interrupt here and go the whole thing to the Lanner's Group, but I just got to, maybe we can edit this out later or leave it in, I don't care. But I just want to say this. I had the chance to see my debut poetry book become a finalist in the Lammies. Now, I did see in many categories winners that were absolutely heroes of my win. My book made it as a finalist, and that was such a great thing for me, and I was so thrilled to be there. But here's the payoff that I didn't realize, and this is a compliment I want to give you. Because for Penguin Random House to take that chance, as you said, on an uncharacterizable book in a way, right? Something that everyone, the old saying, give me the same thing but only different, especially in publishing because, my God, we can't take too much of a chance if it doesn't, you know, do well in pre-sale. Oh, my God, the numbers are already off. We've got to pull back on distribution. I know these things. Now, I am so fortunate because I walked into the Lammies on the red carpet, and guess what? And Scott will know this. I walked right into Richard Blanco, the inaugural poet from Obama's first term. And Richard Blanco, also an incredible I think poet, an incredible member in the LGBT community, just a real hero of mine. And we start talking, and of course I say to him, Richard, the reason why I not just love your reading and everything else, but the reason why I know so much about you is because my publisher is Rennie McQuilkin of Antrim House. And then I suddenly realized that in this room that Rennie McQuilkin of Antrim House has taken such a huge chance on publishing me and has allowed me to get to this point and have all these other people. And again, one of the things is when a publisher takes the chance and then it is recognized in such a way, that is such a brave part on the writer, it doesn't matter that it's not necessarily the book tours don't, you know, it's terrible what has happened in other ways to, you know, little independent bookstores and all the rest.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This is where internet, this is where other things come into play. And this isn't a sales pitch. It's about the fact that people are going to be able to access it and get it. And I'm sure we're going to co-promote and have you back on again. And I want to know how it's going and all. But the thing is, the fact that still a publishing house is taking the chance is one of the greatest. I heard a statistic that 90% of poets don't get published in their own lifetime. So I was like, wow. So in other words, I thought I was going to have to die before I got published. But when I heard that stat, I figured, okay, well, I better hurry up and die and just, you know, let the manuscript go. So beating these things means that you are truly special. And what you have, because it's uncharacterizable, is exactly the fact that it is so needed. And I'm so thrilled that you're doing it and took the chance on it, and they took the chance on it. I was approached by so many folks there that knew about, you know, and knew Rennie, that was when I had this whole other experience at the Lammies that made me really, really moved and feel so lucky to be in that and amongst those talented people there. I really do.
Yes. And
what was the experience like for you to write it? Have you written anything long form like that before? Have you?
Thank you. I was always a contributor to HuffPost and, you know, had a blog and so on and so forth, as you do in the internet age.
Yep.
And
right.
This is certainly the longest form that I've ever written in. But the way the book is constructed, it is easily digestible. It is almost a short form following a short form following a short form. And
nice.
Each chapter is based on real questions I received via social media. So my literary agent and I noticed that the people who are writing to me always wrote about the same themes, about 10 of them.
Yeah.
So examples would be like haters and how to deal with that, the idea of needing to be perfect and the sort of invisible standard we're all supposed to meet, how to get to know yourself, because people were not taught how to do that.
Right, so that's great.
Those themes that created the chapters in the book and created the exercises and the, you know, the how-tos in the story. But I love
that.
Jeffrey,
awesome.
do you think there is an intended... Here's the thing that's so difficult for me. I mean, I know it's far... Here's the thing, the challenge is I wake up every morning well before sunrise, and with at least one dog, sometimes two dogs by me, I write.
Yeah.
So that's what I do every single day. I can't help it. It's like it brings peace to my, if I haven't written in a couple of days, I get kind of antsy. But that's poetry. Now, on the other side, the nonfiction, the Healing Stigma book that I'm in the process of writing right now, I find it, again, it's incredibly, incredibly important to stay on point in these things that are, you know, very important for the reader. But I know that I'm writing to, in different chapters, different forms of stigma, and then following up with how these stigmas are oftentimes quite the same in both how it can be dismantled, but also how it can be put onto people, okay? But what I'm curious is, do you have an ideal reader in mind in terms of an age group or an audience that you write to? Because I'm really curious. It seems to me to help so many people, but especially young people. That's what it seems to be a huge, huge part here. But yet I know people later in life that are discovering so much about themselves. Every time I think I have your audience down, when I read your work, what I've seen so far, and I think I know who the audience would be, I go back and 2 seconds later, I think there's someone else, a friend of mine, who would love this, and it's a different age group. So who do you write to? I'm curious.
I think that's the point of the book, too. I think it's about making connections, and everyone needs to make a connection, right?
But as a writer, that's just a question I'm burning to ask. You know what I'm saying?
When I make a vine or when I write a section of the book, I am picturing an actual individual person. Sometimes that is someone who has directly written to me, and it's the subject of their email that is the launching point for this part of the book. Or that I actually imagine that I am talking to that one single person in a vine. And I think that's part of what creates the intimacy. And
that's awesome.
We were
Oh my goodness, what? I'm so sorry. I just have to say, I'm not sorry. Earlier I mentioned that Vermeer would love to paint your eyes. And I just realized it's not a haiku. What you create in your vines, I really mean this. There was such an intimate connection in Vermeer's moments of quiet that other painters, that's what he's so famous for in these moments, you know, the milkmaid, the these little tiny moments, I've always said in my own mind, are the first actual cinematographic moments, the way he captured it. Forget the cinema, the camera obscura. That doesn't put paint on the canvas. But in my mind, I just realized what you do and what you just said by having that one-to-one connection, your vines are Vermeers. You capture a light. The light from your eyes and the light in your positive response for people, to me, is the Vermeers of Vine. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean it.
I will leave it to others to compare me to old masters.
No, but in the personal connection, there is something there in what you said. And I don't just come out and, well, I mean, if I say it, I mean it. So trust me, that's thought out because I have looked at Vermeers my whole entire life. It really, really pisses me off that there are still, there's a Vermeer missing from my Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. That hurt me. That literally hurt me.
Yeah.
Hope that comes back again. We want that back. As well as get Rembrandt's only seascape. They were both stolen in the same heist.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
I know I wanted to follow up on that earlier point.
Yeah.
The book is for everyone.
Yeah.
And we were shocked. And by we, I mean, you know, I have a manager, I have a publicist, I have a team.
Yeah.
And so we analyzed the numbers of my social fans, and we were thinking, oh, it's LGBT teens. That's what we're going to find out. That's
mm-hmm.
who it is. But no, it was
no.
every single demographic you could imagine.
Yeah.
The internet in general skews young, but it was only skewing slightly. So I have fans that are every age group, every ethnicity, every country in the world, every walk of life, straight, gay, queer, anything else that you can think of. So it's not, and what I'm most proud of is it's not an attribute, like a physical or ethnic attribute that brings us together. It is an ideology. It's a connection. It's a hunger for something more. That's the defining thing.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Beautifully said.
There are tons of people who do not get it and who hate it and who are mean. That is, you're going to get that everywhere. I'm not saying the whole world loves me. Absolutely not. The people who get it really do get it.
There's so many different types of haters, too. So there's another thing is that it's not about attacking them or, you know, what we're seeing lately in, you know, political rallies. It really, it's horrible. But this is a way, as you say, of how to be you. So that's the thing is, regardless of what that's coming from, I think so many people nowadays also face aggression in being themselves if it doesn't fit the exact preconceived, sometimes very narrow space that they're expected to kind of shoehorn themselves into, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Sorry, Scott.
Yeah.
I was just going to wonder, being part of the whole YouTube and the Vine thing, there's a lot of those meet and greets and meetups they have. Do you take part in those, Jeffrey? And do you like to, because it seems like you almost crave that connection with your fans that helps you be creative. Do you go to those type of meet and greets or conventions they have?
Yes. When there is a chance to connect with fans, absolutely, 100%. If we're talking about Vine, unfortunately, there are I'll just come out and say it. There are some transphobic and homophobic artists who are also popular on the internet.
Mm.
And so it gets a little tricky when you're at the same convention together. So one has to make certain you know, I want to be around my tribe. And sometimes that looks like going to the Glisten Awards and not necessarily the Vine Meetup, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Totally makes sense. Totally
I understand. I just, it seems like you do such a great connection with your fans there, and it's got to be a two-way street. Because when we were talking earlier, the thing that got me thinking was you speak so well on this, and it doesn't just go to our community. I mean, we have now, we're talking about presidential politics and everything. We have all sorts of labels that people put up. We talk about aggressive and things, and things that a couple of our candidates are being accused of and different things. So it's such a topical thing right now that it's, I love that you're out there and doing this.
Yeah. I would think loving yourself, accepting yourself, I would hope, would always be relevant,
right,
regardless of the climate.
And yet we realize right now that we're in so many different, I would say, states of, it sounds cliche to say states of denial, but I know, you know, a very dear friend who tragically to the opioid crisis lost a daughter, but this was literally multiple times that the family that her daughter had to go through, you know, a near, or, you know, what was a death experience, and then come back again. And in more than one occasion, not just this family, but on more than one occasion, on the first time that there was an obvious overdose, and it was clear that a person was having a very difficult time finding themselves, and they were being labeled and stigmatized, that when you went to the one thing that you would try to help, go to the police and say, you know, we have a problem here, in all these different occasions, in very, very different places in our country, they were met. And this is one of those things that you said, Jeffrey, you know, you get these responses, and multiple times,
yeah,
suddenly you hear the echo. Well, from the work I do with Healing Stigma, every single response from, say, first responders past this into law enforcement, I'm not picking on police, but was the fact that we don't have a problem in our town. That's not a problem in our town.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is, and it obviously is. And part of this, really, the first beginning part, and a lot of these things that I find that it could be cutting, and I'm not saying that all of these things come and can be solved with a magic pill here. I'm not. But a lot of the things I do find stem from people not being able to just be themselves,
yes,
if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's part of what I'm trying to – that system is part of what I'm trying to undermine in the book. Because
right.
I think
okay.
The root of being able to heal stigma is being able to learn about yourself and then accept what you've
yeah.
learned.
Right.
And I feel like what you're saying, you could say similar things about self-hatred itself, that it's
yeah.
like an addiction, and that it's stigmatized, and people want to say, I don't hate myself, but they live in a constant conversation. Oh, that was stupid. They don't like you. You shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
This sort of constant barrage day in and day out, not allowing them to live to their fullest potential and have a vibrant, beautiful life.
That is,
do you know what's
well
interesting
said.
Here, though? Jeffrey,
yeah.
do you think in some ways, though, that this challenge that obviously you are, you know, you are taking your
the
spin on it and helping
down.
Right. Do you find that by, you know, let's say if it was different, let's say, I don't know, but has the challenge in all of this made you better? Has the stigma that you are challenging, another has the
oh,
good,
God.
Yeah, there's something very interesting in that. It is it that the challenge in it that has made you a better form of you, hasn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yes, of course. And to be honest, oh gosh, you guys are just getting all the deep deep secrets from my life here.
Gather around.
Gather around again. Gather around your
yes.
earbuds.
Yes.
I'm doing this because it feels good. You could
yes.
call that a selfish reason if you really wanted to, but helping other people heal is healing. Me.
Yeah. So beautiful.
You could say that's a selfish reason. Sure. I'm glad it's not like I don't care that other people are benefiting from my work. Of course
yeah.
I care. But
yeah.
it would be over real quick if there wasn't that drive to put right in my own life what once went wrong. That's a quote from Quantum Leap. Remember that stuff?
I do remember it. Scott Bakula. But I mean,
I think
you're right.
A little
That's...
lilt in your voice there when you said Scott Bakula. I think it was a little
redeeming. Well, thank you very much. I do have my crushes on occasion, but yes.
We're getting everybody's secrets tonight. Everybody gather around.
I'm just pissed off that stupid spinoff show from the Mark Harmon show is not good enough where I can watch him every week because I can't watch. But I was a fan back in the day of Quantum Leap. That is darn true.
Oh, God. So good. And there's another metaphor, right, for bringing healing to people's stigma. Yeah.
Right.
So well said.
Well, I think it's like they say, you have to, it's almost like they do the warning every time on the airplane where you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help others. And I think you really have to start to heal yourself before you can help others like that. And I think that's, it comes full circle.
Yeah. To take the airplane metaphor a step farther is to say putting on your own oxygen mask is helping others.
Very good, right.
That's true.
When
all right,
you
guys,
are gasping,
we're running out of time. Last thing I want to go before you go, Jeffrey.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk
God, that
for
flew
just
by.
A couple of seconds. We're into Pride Month. We're in our second week of Pride Month, and Pride is all about what you're all about. Talk about what Pride means to you for just a little bit here, and be sure to give everyone, if they haven't followed you already, which is just silly of them, let them know where they can find you on social media.
Absolutely. I am very upset with the Catholic Church. Pride is one of the seven deadly sins. I really wish it wasn't. Because there's nothing sinful about it. There's nothing shameful about being proud. We are taught that you're supposed to hide your light under a bushel to bring in that biblical reference.
Yeah.
And that if you have pride, it is egotistical, it is selfish, et cetera, et cetera. And it's quite the opposite of that. Pride is the gateway to altruism and loving others. So be proud. If you'd like to find me on the internet, just Google eyeshadow beard. But
I love it.
If you would like a more direct route, JeffreyMarsh.com, JeffreyMarsh.com, and Twitter, it's TheJeffreyMarsh, Instagram, YouTube, you mentioned them all. Just find me and connect. Write to me, please. I'm a very accessible celebrity.
Well, that's the best thing about you is you definitely connect back. We just want to thank you so much for being on the show. Kevin and I have been looking forward to this for so many weeks. I really appreciate it. Great to have you on, because like you said, Pride Month is all about pride, and that's what you really try to install in everyone that you speak to through all of your work. We're going to go ahead, and I want you to hang on the line for us for a second. We're going to be back in just a little bit. Kevin and I are going to talk all about his trip to the Lammies and things that are going on in the world right now. But thank you so much to Jeffrey Marsh for being on. We're going to finish off with Terry and Naomi again when you come around. And we'll be back in just a couple of moments. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio.
Turn the kids we were into the strangers we are now.
faces of the horses now. I remember when I didn't know my way around, but I know all the faces of the horses now. Yeah, I know all the faces of the horses now. Don't know how I feel about you. I could never be all the things that you want me to be. I know who I am without you, but when you come around, I forget who I want.
And that was Tara Naomi with When You Come Around. So thankful for her to let us hear her music today. That was a great interview, Kevin.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I know I talk over. I know I interrupt. But that was so much fun, so exciting. You know, when you're in the presence of Jeffrey, who is changing, I think, the very nature of how we view ourselves, and you're on the cutting
right.
edge of that with art and style, it makes me so proud that we're doing the show. And I don't want to take up too much time on anything else because I want to make sure we get to, and Jeffrey said it so well, that what you're doing is making this happen for so many people's word to get out there. And so I want to make sure that we let our listeners know how to vote for the Left of Straight podcast and the award. Could we make sure we do that? Scott?
Yeah, thank you very much. Voting
yeah.
is available till this Sunday night, 11:59 Sunday, voting closes. You have
okay.
today, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can vote just once a day. You don't need to do it from multiple emails because they have a way to track that. So it's once
yep.
a day, but you can do it every day for the next 5 days. Go to www.podcastawards.com. Scroll down to the LGBT category. Look for the Left of Straight show. Give a little check mark. You scroll down to the bottom and put your email address in and your name and hit vote, and they will send you a confirmation. You have to confirm it. They're very they're really good at making sure that people can't kind of rig the system there. So
yeah.
I appreciate everyone's vote, and we'll find out hopefully just a couple of weeks. Like I said, it ends on Sunday. So I'm so excited about that. Now you were
That's
in New York
brilliant.
To talk about the Lammies. I'm so excited to hear
yeah.
how it went. We got to hear a little bit about it during the show, but talk about the experience. What was it like?
Well, like
to,
I said,
I just wanted
no,
to know
I
what
mean,
was it like
me,
to be amongst all these writers and people that you've admired already, but are able to really kind of see the culmination of everyone's work, kind of appreciated as it was.
You know, they treated us as the finalists with such a show. First of all, it was really entertaining. The crowd was great. The NYU Skirball Center, where it's held, like I said, I'm still kind of unpacking and processing everything because I got to meet in one night so many people that moved me in so many different ways. So I'm sorry if this kind of comes a little bit scattered, but one of the things I will say is to be in the room as, and I want to make sure I think I get the last name right, Hilton Ailes. I've read his stuff so many times, but I haven't pronounced his name. But Hilton Ailes, I think it is Ailes, is the drama critic. So well written, New York Times, a finalist in the the Pulitzer Prize this year.
Okay.
And to see him presented with the award that he was presented, an achievement award of such power. And the presenters were wonderful. But and I know I'm jumping around here, but here's what, you're talking about being political, right? And you're sitting down, and it's just wonderful. Everyone's all, you know, glitzed up, and they had a wonderful pre-party. The whole thing was just orchestrated, lovely. But Kate Clinton comes out and starts talking about, obviously, can't do anything without talking politically about this, and her last name sharing it, and waking up every morning having this feeling like, you know, maybe the headlines are about her, or at least seeing everything as Clinton this, Clinton that.
She's an amazing
right away.
She's very funny.
I'm not. I just got to say, she said she's already got the next. And this was, of course, before what's now happened recently with the Democratic Party. But she said the only thing she keeps waking up every morning is hearing the slogan for Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it's Hill Yeah. Hill Yeah.
Oh. I love that.
And I thought that Hill Yeah. Who are you voting for? Hell yeah. And I just thought it was so funny. And everything from there, I mean, yes, I got to meet heroes. I got to meet people that are just wonderful. And you know, here's the other thing. Got the feeling that it's a how should I say this? It is an organization that is even far greater in what it does, and having gone there and seen it and been part of it, that you will never, ever forget that. And you look forward to help others. There were so many people there that were recognized in such a wonderful way, and you know there are so many others that are doing work as well that's coming up. I mean, it's just one of those things that New York City is not the only place doing this. There are so many people around the world in their own way now that we have the internet, and I know you know that's what Lambda Literary does is it's to focus on one night or on one city was brilliant, but to see the work that it's doing around the world, freedom of expression is also another thing. And it's just that's really, really exciting. To do it for me to be there. Here's the other thing I just got to say to Scott, since you're so lovely to ask. The greatest thing was to have so many people look at me and say, "What the heck were you thinking to write a debut poetry book with a word in Gaelic?" How this happened. So the great thing was, is a lot of people asked me, "What does Riastrat mean, and where does this come from?" So I had the chance to tell my story. People were so fascinated by it that that's the other thing is that's the pleasure of the evening. It was a real honor to represent, as I said, Rennie McQuilkin's Antrim House as our publisher for this lovely, lovely work, and all the people who also were part of it. It was really an honor. Congratulations to all the winners. The winners in the bisexual literature category as well are so deserving. I am so thrilled for every single one of the winners. They are really huge, huge mega stars. And can I also say I don't have the name in front of me, and I am so sorry about that. I'm not going to name drop it, but we're going to keep it in. But there is, in every one of these categories, so moving, the stories. But there was a youth category written about what it was like for a young boy to want to play Charlotte in Charlotte's Web. I think it was in, like, you know, primary school or middle school, and the reaction and how that, you know, from a trans author. It was so moving that the entire house was like, you know, you felt the power in that work. And that's the kind of stuff that's being acknowledged.
That's so exciting. Yeah. I had to make you want to get back home and write right away again, start writing again.
Actually, I already wrote. I was fortunate enough to be able to visit with friends, one of my original readers, who was an absolute, just incredible, incredible person to catch up with, and I couldn't stop. I actually stayed over, and the morning I woke up, I had already started writing another poem on the visit to New York. I can't help it. I can't help it. If I sleep too long, I might forget the words, and I feel like, oh, my God. And, you know, here's somebody else said it. Wasn't it after the blog posts that Rebecca Lombardo writes, she thinks I'm totally tapped out. After every poem I write, I think that's it. I'm not going to have another one. And I write every day.
That's fantastic. Well, great show. We got a lot of stuff going on. Pride Month is in full bloom around here. I'm kind of right in the middle of everything. We have Pittsburgh Pride this weekend. We have Columbus Pride the following weekend, which I'm going to go participate in. Then we have Cleveland in my hometown of Youngstown. So it's a lot of stuff coming up here. We have some great shows coming to talk about different areas from. We have an out and proud lesbian rapper, Gritty, coming on next week. That's going to be a very interesting show.
That's going to be so
incredible. Lots of fun there. And then kind of going the flip side of Jeffrey is how much his positivity and everything. On the 22nd or 23rd, we have Dr. Vince Pellegrino coming on. He's a professor at Hofstra University in New York, and he has written a book called Talk It Out and How to Remove Gay Shame. And I think it's going to be dovetail perfectly into what we're doing here. And a couple other great guests coming through. We're kind of booked all the way up through July, so it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and I just wanted to put a little buzz in there. I'm going to be at table for the Bisexual Resource Center at Boston Pride, and we have some amazing, amazing things coming up this year. I think – you know, here's the thing. Even though everything looks kind of, how should I say, very, very political, there are a lot of people working in Washington, regardless of party, regardless, and we all hope, I think, that sanity prevails. Let's put it that way. We all hope that sanity, peace, and wisdom prevails. But I just have to say that as we go from Pride now into what will be, I think, a very, very busy year for recognizing that forward movement needs to be made on all of these issues, and not let it become a state-by-state quagmire for human rights, I think we have a very exciting year coming up. So anyway, I'll be at Boston Pride. I know, Scott, you're doing a ton of stuff. And if anyone, any of our listeners, wants more information on any Pride events and can't find it for whatever reason, don't forget, just reach out to us, because we'll get you hooked up with your community. We'll do everything we can. Community is important.
Exactly. That's what Pride means. We're going to finish up tonight with two exciting announcements for Kevin and I. The first is we finally have our Facebook page. We told you we have our fantastic social media director. She has put together the Facebook page. It's Healing Stigma Radio on Facebook. So facebook.com/Healing Stigma Radio. So be sure to go there and like us. Of course, you can always should be following us on Twitter at Heal Stigma Radio and catching all of our episodes at HealingStigmaRadio.com. So be sure to check those things out. And as of this week, we have the Left of Straight radio station has our own app on Apple iPhones now. So
you can
go to your Apple iStore, go to your App Store on your Apple phone, go under Left of Straight Radio, and you're going to have an app where it'll come directly to your phone. All of our Healing Stigma on Left of Straight radio shows, all of the Left of Straight shows that I do, my entertainment show, and coming soon, our Tell Me a Story with Liz Rubino will be on it as well. So if you own an Apple phone, we're going to hopefully be in Androids within a week. But if you have an iPhone, go to the App Store and look under Left of Straight Radio. You can download the app. You'll never miss an episode. And we're trying to figure out how to do it live so you can actually do some live shows through the app itself. Right now it catches it up. It's on there by the next day. So today's show is going to be on the app tomorrow. So you're listening one day behind, which is fantastic. And it's all going through Spreaker.com. You can follow us there as well at Spreaker.com. So much stuff happening for us, Kevin. I'm really excited. Just not to toot our own horn or anything, but let's toot our own horn a bit. It's kind of getting exciting here.
It really is. I was just going to say, remember last time I said that, you know, Healing Stigma Radio, it's the best thing with the right appropriate sunscreen to do at the beach. And now if you're stuck on one of those long TSA lines, you know, and you've got this app, I mean, we're there for you. You know, we don't want you to be without Healing Stigma. It's not a good time. It's not a good time to be without it. So we're going to be accessible. But no, I really do love what the whole team is doing. And our guests today, again, I just really, really have to say that I was totally smitten with Jeffrey Marsh and what they are doing. I almost went down that road there. And so I just have to say again, Scott, a huge, huge thanks for, you know, first inviting me on Left of Straight and then coming up with this wonderful, wonderful idea. You motivate me every week to go back to writing and then pop out of my hole and say, hey, what's been going on? But this is really exciting stuff. And I'm so proud of Pride Month. I really am.
Well, back at you. I am too. I'm looking so forward to Gritty next week. Be sure to tune in next Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Be sure to check a local programming soon for Jeffrey and I to be on The Amazing Race or Big Brother or something. Who knows? And we are just excited to be doing the show for you every Thursday. That wraps it up. For Kevin and I, this is Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. You guys have a fantastic week. Goodbye.